You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and Fan Rag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyouseheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
It's Mailbag Monday. We're answering the questions you sent in via Twitter or to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And we'll be talking about the Heat's offensive struggles, James Johnson's slump, and point justice all later on. But let's start with this question about LeBron James. Billy writes in, LeBron made his return to Cleveland four seasons ago as the Heat were growing old and the Cavs looked young and promising with Kyrie Irving, Tristan Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and potentially Dion Waiters. Now the Cavs are old and slow. They have no defensive effort. They have no drive or passion, and they have no young talent. I know the Heat would look 100% differently, but the way Coach Spo works his team into shape and the way the organization finds diamonds in the rough is something that is unmatched in the league, San Antonio excluded. Do you think LeBron is looking at Miami a half game back and thinking, I should have stayed there if I wanted to win six rings? It's a really interesting question. I wanted to start with this, David, for a reason, because Miami has had a hard time sort of grabbing that third seed from the Cavaliers. They seem to just always sort of be a half game back and then they'll drop one. Mm-hmm. But look, I've always said that LeBron's biggest mistake, if he were to make a mistake in his career, perhaps his biggest mistake was, and it's hard to know for sure, but maybe not appreciating good coaching when he has it, specifically with Eric Spoelstra, not appreciating the structure of the Heat organization and not appreciating what somebody like Spoelstra was able to do for him and with him while he was in Miami. What do you think?
I agree that the coaching factor is a big thing, but in reality, I mean, even lacking a quality coach like Eric Spoelstra in Cleveland between David Blatt and Ty Lue, he still managed to make it to the NBA Finals. He still managed to win at least one ring there, and there's a good chance that he'll make it there again this season, even with all their struggles. As much hype as Spoelstra and Brad Stevens get, and deservedly so, I don't know that coaching has necessarily made much of a difference in impacting James' career. And moreover, as far as whether or not James would want to have been or preferred to have stayed in Miami, I absolutely don't think that's the case. Like, you could argue, and no one knows this for certain, but I would think that for James being from Akron and everything else and being able to get Cleveland a championship, the city, the area, the state, whatever have you, a championship after years and years and years of ineptitude, I think probably means more than the two rings, like from an emotional, personal level. Whether it's, you know, from an arithmetic perspective, obviously not. Like, he's looking to total as many as possible, but still that one Cleveland title probably means more. And I don't think he would have been able to accomplish that here. The other factor is obviously that the team building process is different when you have James on the team. You've got a big three and you've put pieces around. You know, you have to fit those pieces, make the most of your tenure while you're there. And if you don't produce, guess what? You're out. You get traded, you get replaced, new pieces get added in, and that's just the nature of it. So I don't know that if you had kept James here, that team building wouldn't have been the same. We wouldn't have gone Whiteside, as Billy writes in.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't have had, you know, we wouldn't have been able to sign Lou Alding. We wouldn't have been able to get Joe Johnson, probably.
Well, even some like the Tyler Johnsons, Goran Dragic may have never been traded for. There's
absolutely
probably never a Justice Winslow or even a Josh Richardson.
Absolutely not.
Unless maybe they take Josh Richardson at the end of the first round where they would have been picking instead of, you know, in the second round. That's always a possibility. I do. This question sort of keeps me awake some nights. It's like, what would this team look like if LeBron had stayed in Miami? Just like as a fun hypothetical thought exercise. And it really is an interesting question, because when LeBron was here, obviously you kind of bolster that roster with guys like Shane Battier, Chris Anderson, veterans, you know what I mean? Veterans who have been around and can do things. You're able to go get a Ray Allen. You know, I wonder if the sort of players that Golden State is picking up now, David West, Zaza Pachulia, guys like that, if the Heat would have also been in the mix for those sort of players, you know, if LeBron had stayed, and probably they would have been. So it's just, but it's interesting, but what, go ahead.
No, adding those kind of role players, though, it depends. Your team success still depends on the ability of your big three, your main players, to generate offense and or defense. And in this case, with Chris Bosh facing, you know, life-threatening injuries, with Dwayne Wade tapering off because of age and injury, I mean, it just wouldn't have been the same thing. It would have been LeBron.
Who would have been LeBron's Kawhi Leonard, right? That would have been the question. If LeBron had been, let's, for just comparison's sake, if LeBron is Tim Duncan – and, you know, for Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu, they start falling off. But because Tim Duncan was able to, you know, have Kawhi Leonard as a teammate late in his career, he was able to win another championship and sort of prolong that dynasty a little bit. That's the question, is how did the Heat go and get that next guy? Because that's the big question. Would they have traded two first-round picks for Goran Dragic and made Goran Dragic their second guy?
They probably would have done it, but I mean, who knows how he would have played alongside, you know, the point guard position is negated alongside LeBron James because of his ball handling and everything else. So
yeah, I'm not sure they would have.
Unless he's a creator like Kyrie Irving, it wouldn't really make much of a difference.
Or just like a killer shot maker who you just sort of take over for 3 minutes, and Dragic isn't that. He's a lot of things, but that's just not his game. I think one thing though, you're absolutely right. That championship in Cleveland, I think LeBron, ever since winning that, has shown such a maturity is not the right word, but almost just like not complacency, but he just seems happy, content. He's content with whatever happens now because he has that his number one goal, which was to bring a championship to Cleveland. But I do think he looks at Spoelstra and he's like, man, maybe I didn't appreciate everything that he gave me when I was there because Ty Lue can't coach at all. So
yeah, but I don't know. Like, he would have. The thing is, and this is part of the whole Miami culture and everything else that we talk about so often, is that it's just not, isn't for anybody. The same way that playing alongside a guy with as domineering a presence as LeBron James, it's not for everybody. I think Miami isn't for everybody. Like, you don't always want to be pushed all the time. At some point, like he pushes himself, but I guess he doesn't want to hear the organization tell him, well, that's great, but there's still a certain way to do things that would make you even better. I don't think he wants to hear that. I think he feels like he's in control of his own destiny, and he doesn't want to be told all the time what to do differently or better. So he's probably happy with Ty Lue as a coach, to be 100% honest with you, because he is a little manipulative, I think. And
I don't see it. I just see the way that he just screams at Ty Lue on the sideline. I just can't imagine.
Can he do that to Spoelstra? Could he have done that to Spoelstra?
I think they would yell at each other, but Spoelstra would actually, like, what Spoelstra has that Ty Lue doesn't. And yes, Ty Lue has won a championship, whatever.
Right, sure.
But he has a credibility. You know what I mean? Like, Spoelstra's ideas are good. I just don't see, like, Ty Lue is just playing like the. It took Ty Lue how many games to lose in a row or in 15 games to change even a lineup? Like, I don't know that Ty Lue is a good. I don't know. I do know. Ty Lue is just not a good basketball coach. He's just not. And Eric Spoelstra very much is. So there is a credibility. I don't know. It's hard to. I don't want to start trying to mind read LeBron James, but I do feel like there's, like, with LeBron, he just wants other people to be good at what they do because he's so good at what he does. So maybe he wouldn't mind so much being pushed or whatever, or maybe, you know, maybe the whole Heat organization of practicing all the time or whatever it was. And we've heard from these players that they practice too much, but maybe that sort of dies down if hypothetically LeBron stays, whatever. But just as far as a coaching standpoint, I think he just wants somebody that's good at their job, which he just hasn't had since returning to Cleveland. I don't know. Let's get to our next mailbag question. This comes from Chicharito Marito on Twitter. I'm kind of worried that we might look to trade Wayne Ellington. Is he the glue that holds it together offensively? This is after, of course, our big trade deadline preview that went up last week, parts one and parts two. If you haven't listened to that, I recommend that you go back and do that. The idea of having to trade Wayne Ellington is interesting only because he's an expiring contract. The Heat, as currently set, won't have the cap space or the room to re-sign him. So you wonder, do the Heat just kind of cut their bait early and just sort of try to get an asset in return, maybe a first or a second round pick or something like that? It's been talked about a little bit here and there. And if Miami is just not at, if Pat Riley decides, hey, this team's just not going to contend at the level that I want them to, might as well get something for Wayne Ellington. It's a possibility. It's out there. Are you worried at all, David?
Yes, I am, actually. I never thought we'd get to this point where we'd say that Wayne Ellington is, as Chicharito Marito writes in, the glue that holds the team together. But he really is. Like, the team has become so dependent. Like, well, even in Miami's comeback against the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday night, like, none of that happens without Ellington putting up shots as often as he does. And, you know, a couple of them will fall, a couple of them won't. But when they do, he's able to single-handedly guide a team out of the jaws of defeat there. And that's impressive and frightening at the same time, that Wade Ellington is that star player for Miami that's able to help Miami. Look, it's dependent on the contributions of other players, obviously, without Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow, et cetera, or Kelly Olynyk. But he's still the guy that can swing a victory in Miami's favor just because of that long-range shooting and how quickly he can put up, you know, 12 points, you know, on four quick shots. It doesn't take much for him to change the course of the game.
It is really like when the Heat get into those offensive slumps, which they do probably once a game at least.
Oh, yeah,
they're
sure.
going to at least or once
not
a game.
Not always
half,
in the third quarter either. It could be in the first half. It could be in the second half. Who knows?
A lot of times it's the fourth quarter too before Ellington comes back in. And it's just – it always seems like it's Wayne Ellington who has to sort of get
the Heat. Offense.
Right, exactly. It's just, they are so reliant on him. I really – if the Heat were to trade Ellington, they would lose more games than they're winning at this point.
Oh, like, absolutely. They can't get enough back to replace his impact on this team, which is frightening to say. I mean, we're talking about him being the linchpin of this team's offense.
If anything, I think that they should double down, keep Wayne Ellington this year.
Yes.
Maybe I'm just being selfish and short-sighted here, but you're not going to get a first-round pick back for Ellington. You're not. Not, especially when there's somebody that's a little bit more dynamic, like a Tyreke Evans out there that could even get a first-round pick, but even he might not. Right. It's not worth it to get a second-round pick in return for Ellington if your whole point is just to compete this year. And look, the Heat aren't going to win the NBA championship. They're not, but just to compete at a high level, it's worth it.
Now, there was an interesting article from Barry Jackson of the Herald. I don't know if you saw that this morning, where he talks about the Ellington situation specifically. And, you know, as we talked about in our trade preview, a lot of whatever moves Miami would make are dependent on whether or not they continue to win at a high level. They've got some interesting games over the next few weeks before the trade deadline. They've got a game against the Mavericks. They got a game at Cleveland. So that's a, you know, the Sacramento Kings loss was a pretty detrimental one for the team, I think, because it shows you that this team isn't necessarily consistent enough to compete at a high level, which is a concern for Pat Riley and the rest of the front office. So when it comes to a guy like Ellington, you might have to move him now while his value is at its highest, knowing that you're probably not going to get any other opportunity and you're not going to be able to re-sign him next year unless you move somebody else. So maybe they hold off on a decision. Maybe they think, yeah, we can compete this year and we'll see what happens over the summer. But there's also the other possibility that they'll say, you know what? You know, we're going to move Wayne now while we still can. And the season's basically lost.
Maybe you bring back like a Matt Williams or something. Like you sign Derek Jones Jr. to a full 15-man roster spot. I don't know. Ronnie Magruder coming back could impact things. Maybe trade Ellington Magruder some minutes. If anything, I think the Heat should double down and go find another three-point shooter such as Ellington because they rely on him so much. I think they should keep him and go find another one. I don't know, much easier said than done, obviously, but they need – relying on one guy the way they do, especially somebody like Wayne Ellington who's just been a journeyman throughout his career is just insane.
Now, there's an option. I mean, with the season-ending injury to Andre Roberson in Oklahoma City, a team that's obviously in win-now situation and feels like they have to compete against Houston and Golden State for the Western Conference title. The loss of Roberson for people that, you know, dismiss Roberson, he's not a great offensive player without a doubt. He struggles at the free throw line. He struggles as a shooter, et cetera. But he's a hell of a defender, a really, really
defensive
great
player of the year. Candidate.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people just kind of dismiss him because he plays alongside Westbrook and stuff like that, but he is unheralded in how good he is as a defender. I wonder if he's crucial to what their chances of success. Like for all the struggles they've had offensively, he's made that defense really, really good.
Paul George on the wing is just that's their version of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. Like
so
it's just
I wonder whether or not they might be interested in trying to pry, say, a Justice Winslow. A guy who's a very good perimeter defender and maybe a package for Alex Abrines and a future first round pick. I don't know. It's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I haven't thought about either. It's really interesting. Yeah. You know, I think two guys that the Heat are going to get calls about is Wayne Ellington and Justice Winslow. I think they're going to get calls about both of those guys. I could see the Houston Rockets maybe trying to upgrade that Gerald Green spot and get Wayne Ellington. I was watching Minnesota the other day, and their announcers just kept saying how poor their floor spacing is and how badly they need to go get a shooter at the trade deadline. Minnesota could try to go get Wayne Ellington. We talked about that in our preview, I think, their trade deadline preview. All right, we've got a couple of questions about Miami's struggling offense and Goran Dragic next. But first, if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional media, and the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year, every day, as opposed to people reading newspapers or listening to radio. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable. They're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information and next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. James Johnson has missed 14 of his last 17 three-pointers, David. We're going to talk about his struggles later on. But first, Josh asks, we are ranked at the bottom of the league in terms of offensive pace. Why aren't we pushing the ball more to get easy buckets, especially with a guy like Goran Dragic on the floor? Do you think that their pace is a problem, David?
I'd like to see it quicker at times, but I think it works best with the rotation that they have. Like as much as we'd like to think that they're capable of pushing the pace with a guy like Goran on there, I really don't think that's their strength. Like James Johnson slows things down. Even Josh Richardson, as young and quick as he is, slows things down. Justice works best when he's in transition, but those opportunities are limited. So he's not going to really pick the ball up and push that pace as far as anything is concerned. So, and then a guy like Whiteside obviously slows things down considerably. Right. So I think it's just the makeup of this roster. Like it's just, I know maybe that's the way that Spoelstra wants to play it. He had that same slowing down offense when Dwayne Wade was there a couple seasons ago. And obviously their pace was a lot quicker with the big three, but I think a lot of that was again built on around the strengths of a guy like LeBron James. I don't see it as a problem. Do you?
No. And I mean, preferably you'd play at a faster pace, like a Houston or a Golden State or something like that. But you're right. This team doesn't have a shot creator or a shot maker who could play at that pace. I mean, you look at the teams that can do that. I mean, let's look at the Warriors, for example. Kevin Durant could just pull up from any point on the floor and conceivably make a shot. Yeah. Steph Curry obviously could do the same thing. Klay Thompson could do the same thing. You've got a guy like Draymond Green who is so good at just grabbing a rebound and just jetting down the floor at the other end and making the right pass. The Heat don't have that player. They have to work so hard to get good shots. Watch any Miami Heat possession where they make a shot. How many times are they moving the ball with the dribble handoffs and the passing and the off-ball screens and the on-ball screens? Wayne Ellington and James Johnson just zipping around the perimeter over and over and over again.
And this sometimes, it still comes down to an Ellington miracle shot too sometimes.
Sometimes, right. And that's just the way Miami's offense is. And they have figured out a way for the most part, for like the balance of the season, to do it efficiently. I think they've struggled the last few games, obviously. But just for an example here, the NBA's stats website will measure how many miles per game and over the course of a season a team runs. And right now the Heat are 10th in the NBA in miles traveled on the floor. That just kind of shows you how much they're just running around and zipping around the perimeter and doing these things because they have to work so hard to score every single time they score, basically. So it's just hard to improve the pace when you have to basically work that hard. There is no Russell Westbrook to sort of just Brody his way to the rim. You know, the Heat don't have that guy, so they have to work hard. And because of that, their pace goes down, but they play fast. You know, that's the thing that I think gets lost in translation with pace is that they're not playing fast. They're playing quickly. Watch them run around and move. They are a team that plays quickly. They just don't put shots up quickly.
Right.
And that there's a difference in that. And I think that the personnel that they have, to your point, matches what they're able to do and what they have to do in order to win games.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what the Spurs were running a couple of offense. They just continue to pass after pass after pass to yields the best shot available during the 24 seconds allotted to you. And I think, I mean, you go back a couple of years ago, that Spurs offense was blowing people out of the water. It killed Miami in 2014 in the NBA Finals, and it was the same thing. Just moving the ball around, finding the right open shot. And that's what Miami is doing. It's so interesting that 4 years later, that offense almost seems too slow in comparison to other guys where that you're able to, like you said, create a pull-up jumper in transition or something like that, like a Westbrook or a Steph Curry. So it's really interesting. I mean, I'm not too worried about it. You'd like to see more opportunities there. And I think this question kind of ties into our next question, because I think Goran Dragic in particular has had a hard time finding those opportunities in transition.
You're right. So let's get to that next question. Jeff writes in, for all the crap that Hassan Whiteside rightly gets, Goran Dragic has had way too many nights where he fails to be option 1A and maybe injury, but his plus minus over the course of the year speaks to this. So kind of to your point there, I think that's an accurate statement to make by Jeff, where Goran Dragic doesn't get a whole lot of the blame, but he has had a pretty inconsistent year. And even though you and I ended up just putting him on our fake all-star ballots,
yes,
that was kind of what that was why I was so hesitant to just kind of go out there and say that Goran Dragic should absolutely be an all-star, is because he has had so many off nights. That said, he's not a superstar player. I mean, players have off nights. And I think if you look at the balance of the season, Goran Dragic has obviously been a net positive for the Heat. And there's not a lot of guys on this team that could do what he does for the Heat. But look, there are nights, very recently, the last three or four games here, where he's just not been good. And you look at the end of that Hornets game, it's Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow in there to run the offense, and Goran Dragic is on the bench. And Spoelstra's not been afraid to bench guys who are not playing well. And Goran Dragic was engaged and seemed excited for his team to win. It doesn't seem like a problem necessarily, like when Whiteside gets benched at the end of games sometimes. But you're right. Like, he isn't – I just don't think Dragic is a 1A guy, and he has to sort of – he's forced to play that role right now for this Heat team.
Look, he had a particularly bad game against Charlotte. But I think overall – I mean, over the last – I'm looking at the last couple games since – well, basically since the new year. He's had, you know, 25, 24 points, 19, 16, 24, 20, 25, 22. I mean, he's averaged like over 20 points per game over the past month or so. So
– yeah.
It was just a bad game, and there are moments there where he's not shooting at a high level because, you know, I don't think he's quick enough anymore to be able to get past them. And I think there's also been, because of the focus on drawing fouls and how those fouls are drawn, something that was always a problem for a guy like Goran anyway, he's no longer able to create as much offense as he did. Look, I talked about it even in the season preview that I thought that was going to be a concern. Like, a big part of his offense the previous year was him curling around a screen on the three-point line and creating the illusion of contact, selling a foul call, and getting three free throws out of it. He hasn't been able to do that. I don't see the numbers in front of me right now as far as how many times he's been able to draw a foul or a three-point shot, but it hasn't been many, and that was a big part of his offense last year. So, I mean, for a guy who already struggles to get foul calls, a guy who already initiates a lot of contact when he's driving to the hoop, you know, it's going to be a struggle for him to generate extra points at the free throw line. So, yeah, you know,
I think that these expectations, we talked about LeBron earlier in the show. I still think there's like this lingering expectation of guys who are the top option on a Heat team by Heat fans to sort of just be as consistent. I mean, I think that LeBron's just overall consistency is overall taken for granted by everybody, but especially by maybe Heat fans when he was here. Just the fact that he was able to come in and just score 20 points a game, just basically average 25, 7-7 a night is just insane. And the same goes for Dwayne Wade, who at the end of every game would just somehow have at least 18 to points. You know what I mean? Even on a bad night, he'd score 20. And Chris Bosh is just overall consistency on both ends was always something that he could count on. And those are guys who are Hall of Fame players. Goran Dragic right now is not a Hall of Fame player. He's, you know what I mean? So there might be some sort of expectation from just from being the top guy on a team that you should be more consistent. And that's a fair expectation to have, you know, but just not every guy can do it. And you look at it, you watch basketball across the league, and there's very few guys like LeBron, Wade, Bosh, those superstar players who are night in and night out able to just perform. And the one thing that with Dragic, if just because of what he, his position that he plays, his size, he's just not going to ever be a plus defender. At the best, he could be a neutral defender. Yeah. And so if he doesn't have it going offensively, it's not like he can make it up on the other end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's sort of the problem with Dragic, is that he's just, there is a certain ceiling to how good he can be. And that's just something to keep in mind, I think, if you're a Heat fan, is yes, he is the top option offensively for the C team, but he probably shouldn't be. He would not be a top option for a championship team. And that's just where the Heat are right now.
Yeah.
We're going to continue with our mailbag next. But first, a quick reminder to make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes to help other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Claudia, a patron of ours, asks, so what the heck happened to James Johnson? He's missing easy shots, layups, and forget about the three-pointers. He was so good last year. This year, not so good. What do you think, David?
I think this is the second time Claudia's asked about James Johnson. I think she's got a bone to pick with him, you know? You got to do more yoga, Claudia. You're not relaxed enough when it comes to your dealings with James Johnson.
Like, maybe JJ should be doing some yoga. That, loosen up those shoulders. Maybe get the three-pointers going in.
I'd love to be able to pull that off, to have Johnson come in for all of his MMA training and everything else. I would love for him to be able to just sit there for a yoga class. That would be a Jason Jackson-worthy segment for a Heat podcast.
Oh, my gosh. It is funny that James Johnson is like this MMA black belt fighter with the nickname Bloodsport, and his brother Tyler Johnson has like got all those headlines right before the season started about his new foray into meditation and stuff. And I just want that picture of Tyler Johnson on his mat, breathing in and out and concentrating on his breath and just meditating while James Johnson's in the corner like doing karate. That's what I want. That's the photo I want.
That would be a great visual. But anyway, back to Claudia's question then, I guess. I mean, the struggles have been many. He's had some very, very weird games there where he just seems like he loses focus completely. And maybe this is just who he really is as a player. Like, we had the very best season of his last year, and it was at a contract, you know, a moment there where he was playing for a contract, perhaps even to stay in the league. And so those are kinds of things that have to be taken into consideration. You can't dismiss the fact that he was playing for his right to stay in the NBA and not just be able to garner a lucrative contract, just to say, you know what, I'm worthy of being the 13th or 14th guy at the end of your bench. And so he was playing at a very, very high level. He was willing to do whatever it took. He lost the weight, obviously, and he played a really efficient role for Miami. This year, that role has changed. I think it's a little bit bigger, and I think it's he's not necessarily lived up to that. Turnovers in particular have been a problem for him. Like, there are just too many times where as good a pass as he can make, he makes the exact opposite one, where he fumbles the ball, whips it too quickly, throws it ahead of somebody cutting to the hoop, and we need more out of him. Like, that's been disturbing to me in particular. I think as far as the offense is concerned, you've got some numbers here that show that he's struggled somewhat.
Yeah, and just, you know, like you said with the turnovers, it's just you have seen him play less and less of that point forward role. He still plays it quite a bit, but I think less so than last year.
Yeah.
And then from three-point range, he's just not shooting as well. Mm. And he had a career year last year from three-point range shooting 34%, and that's not the case this year. He's shooting 29.7% this season, below 30%, but guess what? That's almost exactly his career average. So he regressed back to his average after having a career season. That was expected. I think everybody expected that to be the case this year. Not helping him is Miami's offense last season. That drive and kick offense, which was a lot of the same players, but a completely different system compared to what the Heat are running now offensively, really kind of played into James Johnson's strengths, where he could just sort of hover around the perimeter, wait for Dion or DeGoran to kick it out to him, and he can make a wide open three pointer.
You know,
he likes to kind of get it right in that above the break area, just to be on the elbow. That's kind of his sweet spot. That's not there as much this year. You know, he's got to be a lot more involved in dribble handoffs along the perimeter. It kind of takes him out of rhythm a little bit. He's got to pull up from 3-point range a little bit more than he had to last year. So that hurts, but you were going to say something.
Yeah, no, I was wondering, you're usually pretty good at knowing these numbers. how many more open looks did Miami generate last year from three-point range in comparison to this season? I know it's something we're going to have to dig into eventually, but I think it's just it's a really good conversation, a good point you just brought up there, because it seems like that offense last season was so effective at like you said, creating open three-point shots. And look at it, like the numbers are dropping across the board. Guys like Goran, Justice, I think, is the only player shooting better this year than he did in the 16 games he played last season. But other than that, I mean, everybody struggled to create three-point shots and have open looks from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. So it's worth
it. I don't know what that team number is, but I can tell you that Wayne Ellington, I think I saw a tweet about this earlier, is maybe third behind only Durant and Steph. Maybe Harden's in there too, but he's right up there in that range of contested threes made. And we just got done talking about how important Wayne Ellington is to this Heat team's offense. Right. So that just sort of illustrates how much the Heat have to get. And I think you look at somebody like Kelly Olynyk, and he's almost the opposite of James Johnson now, where the offense really plays into what he does well. And he ends up getting the pick and pop type of situations a lot more than James Johnson does. And he'll get some wide open threes that he's been good at making this year. But it's not so much there for James Johnson. One thing I will say about James Johnson is he's been getting a lot of crap from Heat Twitter about being in there at the end of games, and people have given Spoelstra some criticism for doing that. What he still does defensively, he's still among the top guys defensively for the Heat in defensive box plus minus. Mm-hmm. He is a very valuable defender. And against the Hornets, yes, he was struggling offensively. But defensively, he was so important, because remember, Hassan Whiteside was not in at the end of that game. They still had to guard Dwight Howard, who was in at the end of that game for Charlotte. And Bam Adebayo, as good as he's been, he's still a rookie, and he's still smaller than Dwight Howard, and he doesn't match up necessarily well with Dwight Howard. But Bam was in there because of his ability to get out on the perimeter and defend pick and rolls. And when he would do that, James Johnson would come in from the weak side and body up Dwight Howard for a few seconds off that shot clock while Bam could get back and recover. James Johnson and Bam Adebayo together defensively is a really, really good defensive tandem that there's a lot of activity there, and they do a lot of things. And overall for James Johnson, he's active on both ends of the floor. He can get involved in a lot of different ways, both offensively and defensively. So what, he's going to go through some shooting slumps, because he's not a good shooter. He's never been a good shooter. It's never been his game. It's never been what he's relied on. So there's going to be moments where he just slumps, but there's also going to be moments where he plays great. And we've seen both of those things several times throughout this season. Just give James Johnson a little bit of a break here, even though he's in this slump, because defensively he brings it. And we kind of talked about what Goran Dragic can't do defensively, his ceiling there. If he's not doing anything offensively, he can't really do anything defensively. Well, he was on the bench at the end of that Hornets game. James Johnson was still out there because his ceiling is so high defensively. And I want to give him credit for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's been inconsistent, but I think there's still promise there. And I think his versatility is something you can't discount, and something that Miami will need if they're going to continue to make this push to be a top four seed in the Eastern Conference.
Our next question comes from Chris. He asks, has Justice Winslow finally started filling that James Johnson role from last year? He brings so much energy and makes so many plays on both ends. So we just got done talking about James Johnson there. And Justice Winslow, the last few games since he's gotten back and he's healthy, has played backup point guard for the Heat. It's been a really interesting look by Miami.
Yeah, he's been sensational. He brings the ball up. He's controlling the offense, finding guys cutting to the rim, creating opportunities for others. You know, and that's, we talked about it all season. Look, it hasn't been part of the offense for some reason. And then, of course, he missed a substantial amount of time due to injury. But for the most part, we always thought that this was going to be the best role for him. You in particular were a big advocate of backup point guard Winslow, and unfortunately it just never really seemed to manifest. But we're starting to see that, and maybe it's to increase his trade value as the deadline's coming up, or maybe it's just because it makes sense without a backup point guard, a true backup point guard there to carry the load for Goran when he's on the bench. But either way, whatever the reasons behind it, he has been really, really good in this role. And I think we're starting to see that more and more lately, that he can make a positive impact that way. Obviously, there are still issues for him to, as far as finishing at the rim are concerned. But his defense hasn't been a problem. His perimeter shooting has been somewhat better. And his playmaking has been great. And that's what we always thought. Look, even I can remember talking about this when we both talked to him in summer league a couple of seasons ago, the year that Dwayne Wade left, you know, that we saw him being shopped around, or not shopped around, but being positioned as the team's playmaker in summer league. And obviously you dismiss it as summer league, but that was the mindset early on. Unfortunately, he didn't play many games because of injury, but that was the whole premise, was that he was going to be the team's playmaker, initiator on offense. And we just didn't really get a chance to see it. Now we're starting to see it. And I think it's paid off pretty well.
It's the best thing for his development that the Heat have done in a very long time. And, you know, we've seen him play everywhere between the four, the three. Sometimes he's played shooting guard this year, and now they're playing him at point guard. And it's been the best thing where he is able to have the ball in his hands. He likes having the ball in his hands. I talked to him before the season started. Yeah. And he said he likes to give the ball energy, and vice versa, that the ball gives him energy when he has the ball. And in that Hornets game, for example, he was playing with so much energy and verve on both ends of the floor. And I think it's because he was just consistently engaged as opposed to just standing in the corner and having guys play off of him. It's so important. And as far as his development goes, doing this against opposing benches is going to be really good for him. I mean, those are, quite frankly, minutes that you could spare and allow for somebody like Winslow to develop, who does so many other things on the floor that you're not just tossing out a point guard who can't really do anything else. Like, Winslow's going to have a positive impact against opposing benches. He's good enough of a player to do that consistently. But you put him in that role, and now he's not having to do it against starters. He's able to kind of just feel his way into that point guard position. And once he really nails, I think, that pick and roll situation with either Olynyk or Bam or whoever, he's going to be really good. And once he sort of nails that down, which he's still a little raw, it's still a little clunky when he runs a pick and roll. Once he gets it really kind of going smoothly and more consistently, he's going to be able to do that against other starters. And he's going to be able to maybe play this role for the Heat and maybe just be like, I don't know, Miami's version of Marcus Smart. Can he be that, a backcourt player who could just guard and switch onto all five positions? I think that might be his future. And, it, you know, we've talked about Winslow comps since he was a prospect, whether it be Kawhi or Jimmy Butler or Draymond Green or whoever. Maybe it's just Marcus Smart. And I'll tell you what, watching the Celtics this season, I think every team can use a Marcus Smart. And I know he gets a lot of crap for his shooting, his inconsistency on offense, and his punching of, I guess, hotel pictures and stuff. But maybe Winslow is maybe Marcus Smart without the temper problem. You know, yeah. So I think, and if he can get streaky shooting every once in a while, that's a bonus. But what he could do handling the ball and what he could do defensively is just invaluable. And I've mentioned this 1,000 times on the show, but when you have a guy like Winslow who's running point for you, and that means that you don't have a traditional point guard on the floor, that makes your defense so much better. And if he's guarding opposing point guards on defense, that means when they run pick and rolls and he gets switched onto a big man, Winslow has the size and the defensive skill to guard those guys credibly, which most point guards just can't do. So it's just a huge boon for them defensively, as much as we like to focus on the offensive end.
Yeah, I agree there. So that's what makes this next question even more interesting, as Taylor writes in, Justice Winslow to Denver for Will Barton and 2 second round picks. The Dunked On podcast with Nate Duncan did this trade in their mock trade deadline pod. That's an interesting suggestion there. Justice Winslow to Denver for Will Barton in 2 seconds. Now, Barton, he's an interesting player there, but I think he would drive Miami fans crazy because it's always been a love-hate relationship with him in Portland or in Denver. Like, there are going to be moments where Will the Thrill Barton is going to electrify the game, and he's going to have 30-something points. He plays backup point guard. He dunks. He can put up some really bad three-point shots and make them. Kind of like a Jamal Crawford. He's a little bit instant offensey. Mm-hmm. But man, defensively, that's a problem. And if you're looking at player for player, which is the only known quantifiable, you know, things that you can measure, Winslow, I think, is still the better option for Miami because, like, he does so many of those little things, like you just said, that there's so much more well-rounded aspects of his game. And you're hoping that his offense eventually catches up. But at the same time, like, Barton's offense is already there. If you're looking for a guy who's willing to take that shot, he'll do it. Like, I wrote about it. I talked to him earlier this year. He's embraced the role as the closer. When they were going through injuries with Nikola Jokic and Paul Millsap, you know, Barton was the guy who was going to take that big shot at the end, and he did it on a number of occasions. And he really – he had like an immense amount of pride about that. And it was a really interesting thing to see him kind of develop. But there are still issues. There's inconsistencies there. So I think if you're looking at that trade, Winslow's better for Miami. Barton provides nice offense. It's what you can expect out of those 2 second round picks, knowing that Miami doesn't have a lot of draft choices over the next few years. That makes this the most interesting one. I say no. What do you say?
I'd also say no. And for a lot of, like, I mean, you nailed the Will Barton profile there. I mean, you nailed it. And there's two issues in addition that kind of come with Will Barton into the Miami Heat. It would be, number one, he's an expiring contract. So you'd have to figure out a way to bring him back, and conceivably he'd get a raise this year. He could be making, based on his offense and what he could do, $8 million to $10 million a year, probably, I'd guesstimate.
He's in the last year of his
market
deal,
value.
Right? He's in the last year of his deal.
Yeah, he's in the last year of his deal. So you have to figure that out. You have to carve that money out, which, as we've talked about at length on the trade deadline previews, part ones and part two that went up last week, the Heat don't have that money. They just don't. Like, they're going to lose Wayne Ellington because they don't have that money. As their situation, as their Excel sheet is currently set, that's what it looks like. So for that reason, I wouldn't do it. The second reason is, if you do re-sign him, well, now you have Will Barton and Dion Waiters. No thanks. Like, I don't. What are you going to do with them?
I just thought of that. That's unbelievable. That would be. I don't know what to do.
Between Will Barton, Dion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, who should be playing the two guard spot and needs the ball in his hands and so often runs the offense at the end of games, I don't. There's. It's just too much. It's too much. Heat fans complained about guard depth going into this year. That would be insane. It just wouldn't work. So, look, I like the idea of having a lengthy score. Will Barton, 6'6", maybe 200 pounds wet, like this mini Slim Reaper type situation thing happening. I like the idea of having another long guy who maybe is a little bit more offensive oriented and shooting oriented next to Josh Richardson. That makes sense to me. But not Will Barton, just not what he does. He's a little inconsistent. He reminds me a lot of like Terrence Ross. You know what I mean? Just like a dude who could sometimes get out there and heat up, but most of the times he's not. And the idea of Will Barton, the idea of Terrence Ross is a little bit better than actually having them on your team. The 2 second round picks doesn't really move the needle for me. I've been a big proponent of trying to get more draft picks, but not if Justice Winslow's value still to me is more than getting 2 seconds. Now, if Will Barton was on a rookie scale deal, then maybe you talk about it. If you were a little bit younger, I think he's 26 years old. If you were a little bit younger, like let's say he was 22, 23, still had 2 or 3 years left on a rookie scale contract, and you were still getting 2 seconds second round picks, then that's interesting, right? There's still some room to grow on Barton's standpoint. You're not risking him getting away in free agency and losing Justice Winslow for basically nothing. But I don't think it's enough to move Winslow.
He's 27, actually. So, I mean,
27.
He's still young enough. Yeah, so he's not young enough where you can hope to get another level out of him. So I think we're
this
pretty
is what
sure.
Will Barton is.
Yeah. I was wondering. I was going to say Will Barton, future Laker. There. He's probably going to get paid a lot of money in free agency, right, for his offense.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, this free agency class is not that great. Once you get beyond the big names, right?
Right.
There's just not a lot of guys in Will Barton's age range and skill territory that are actually gettable. Will Barton might end up just getting like $12 million a year or something crazy.
Yeah, that would be insane.
All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with a recap of the Heat's game against the Mavericks. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. And of course, for sending these mailbag questions in. You could send those in for next week by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions or comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.